Welcome to another episode of Aesthetic Revolution, the podcast. I'm Dr. Ed Zimmerman, your host. Stacy Taylor Zimmerman, my assistant, who will keep me from going too far down rabbit holes, because I tend to do that. And we're talking about all things aesthetic, from forehead to feet, with a concentration of what's in between. Today, we'd like to talk a little bit about fat grafting. This is a big topic in aesthetic medicine. Of course, it has been for 2 to 3 decades. So, yeah. But there's sort of macro fat grafting. We're talking about Brazilian butts and natural breasts and penises and things like that. And there's unique, small, fine-tuning fat grafting. And they're very different. So when people come in and they come into their consultation and they talk about what can I use to revolumize an area, and sometimes they'll be talking about doing small areas, giving a little anterior cheek projection or hiding the tendons and blood vessels in the back of their hand or something like that. And sometimes they're talking about upper pole fullness after they've had breast augmentation and there's an implant in there, but they still have a little concavity or ski slope from nature or being moms or whatever, or it's somebody who wants to have less of a flat backside, so they want the Brazilian butt, but that's going to be another podcast entirely. Or we do basic liposuction and we're left with a lot of good high-grade biodiesel fat that could be purified and put into other areas to accentuate things. So people come in, they have questions, and we're here to answer questions.
Yep. Don't forget the face.
Yeah. So, well, that's why I talked about a little bit of anterior cheek projection or hiding the hollows under the eyes or things like that. So we've talked a little bit. Let's work from the top down. We've talked a little bit about the face and the proportions involved in the rule of thirds up and down, the rule of fifths across, the difference between the elliptical, almond-shaped, somewhat feminine face and the more squared off masculine face. And these are broad generalities. With each person, we like to have a picture that they like of their face from when they were in their mid-20s, so we can see what the skeleton used to support and go from there. And certainly fat is a relatively inexpensive volumizer that may, not always, it can be a bit finicky, but may, as a living graft, last for years, maybe even decades. But it is a living graft, and it has to be handled very carefully, which means it has to be mined or obtained very carefully. So when someone wants to have a little bit of fat grafting, we have to take a little bit of fat from someplace. Generally, it'll be the waist, the love handles, maybe the outer thigh, someplace where we can go closer to the muscle than the skin and remove a small amount of small particles of fat, small particles being 1 to 2 millimeter packets of fat. And we can take it out at very low suction so that we don't hurt the fat cells. And remember, fat cells are probably 50 to 300 microns. A micron's a millionth of a meter. And if you have too many fat cells in a packet and you take it out of the donor site, you're removing it from its blood supply and what feeds the fat cells, and you're removing it from its waste removal system, the lymphatic drainage system. And we take these fat cells out and they're contaminated with red blood cells, with fibrous tissue, with the lidocaine and the tumescent fluid that we use to numb up the area, the donor site. And we have to wash all those things out. And then we need to size the fat cells or the fat packets so that we can put them back in a way that they're more likely to revascularize and live. And a fat cell is kind of like it goes into hibernation for probably 3 to 4 months before the blood supply is reattached to the fat cell and the fat cell can truly get nourishment. So when we put fat in, there's obviously some swelling. Things go down, go down, go down. At about 4 months, whatever you've got at that point, you're probably going to keep for a while. But it isn't necessarily the same size fat cell as it has the potential to be. As you feed that fat cell and the fat cell becomes healthier, its blood supply brings in nutrients. The waste removal supply takes away the toxins, so the fat cell can now restore to the size it was genetically designed to be. And so the fat cell over the course of a year can get a little bit larger. So we really don't know when we do fat shifting or fat grafting what we're going to end up with till we're at least a year out. And then fat can be fickle. We don't know how long, how stable that nutrition supply or that waste removal system is going to be. So it is at the whim and fancy of what's going on in the human body. And certainly if you go on a new exercise program or you're going to lose weight or something like that, those are the first fat cells to either reduce in size or go away entirely. And that can be challenging too. So fat may or may not be a great economic way to do filler long term. And we try to explain that to people.
Yeah, sometimes people that come in, or a lot of times people that come in that want that, are usually people who are pretty healthy and are, you know, exercising a lot. And so they don't understand that, yeah, once we take a little bit of fat, that they might have a little touch somewhere, that they're most likely to metabolize that pretty quickly.
Yep.
And so that's not a good, not a good procedure for them.
Yeah, and, you know, we've seen over the years where taking little islands of fat and maintaining the blood supply and folding it over the edge of the orbit to try to fill the orbital, infraorbital hollows and things like that. It works for some people. It doesn't work as well for others. And some of that is the technique of the surgeon. Some of it's the genetic inheritance of the person and whether you can maintain enough vascularity in that pedicle of fat that you're folding over and if it stays in place. Mm-hmm. So Mother Nature is renowned for putting things back the way she had them, even though we've tried to shift them. But when we're doing fat in the face and smaller amounts of fat, we're really talking about having macro fat, which is 1.5 millimeter packets. So these are very small packets of fat. Anything bigger than that, and the fat in the center of the package tends to not get enough oxygen and necrose. That toxifies the entire, everything that's around it. And so you end up with a puddle of oil that is very much of an inflammatory medium that kills things around it, and that causes fibrosis, which causes scar tissue, and you still don't get the volume out of it. So you've got to size the fat into 1.5 millimeter packets. But if you have 1 millimeter packets on a macro scale, now we have to fill in the spaces around it. So we have macro fat, which is our big grafting fat, and then we have micro fat, which is smaller, fits in between, and then we have nano fat, which contains a lot of the rejuvenative elements, that fits in between that. And then we like to utilize the patient's own platelet-rich plasma as a healing process to help that fat both stay in place because it gels things up and also feeds it. It has all the healing factors and the angio plastic factors, things that make blood vessels grow in, make nerves grow in, things like that. So fat grafting is, at least in our office, always a multifactorial thing. It is truly cell biology. So we're obtaining the fat at low suctions. We're keeping the fat isolated from the air we breathe because the oxygen can oxidize the fat and kill it. We're washing out all the toxins and the broken fibers and the broken fat cells and the red blood cells and the white blood cells. All those have to be cleaned out in order to have a more pure form that we can put in very gently to an area. So we have to prep the area and micro-tunnel the area a little bit where we're going to put the fat. And then selectively, we have to put in our structural macro fat, followed by our micro fat, our nano fat, and our feeding frenzy, the platelet-rich plasma. So it's a very complex, time-consuming thing to do and do it right. And isolating, going from macro fat down to nano fat, that sizing is a whole different set of instruments that we use. These are all sterile instruments, and this is done either in a laminar flow hood or in a sealed set of sealed chambers. There may be centrifugation involved. We have big centrifuges where we can pull the tumescent fluid out and we can get rid of the oil of the broken fat cells. There's a lot of science behind this, which is what fascinates me, in order to get to what looks like a reasonable result, which you may not know what you really have until you're a year out. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot for some people. And that's why sometimes we use fillers, because there's instant gratification. They can keep some fillers for a year and a half, or they can use long-lasting fillers if they know what they want or they decide they like a particular contour. Mm-hmm. But fat does have all the rejuvenative cells, which is why we like to use it in areas where we can get the benefits of those. So where we want the tissue to be supple, where we want to improve sensation. So, you know, after mastopexy or things like that, we can put some fat in, which is going to improve sensation, which is going to improve the color and texture of the décolleté, things like that. We can use it below the belt. Those are generally smaller fat grafting areas. For larger fat grafting, we need to use larger amounts of structural fat if we're doing a Brazilian butt lift or something like that. And we need to selectively put it generally under ultrasound guidance so that we don't accidentally put this fat into a large blood vessel and cause a pulmonary embolus or a death, as we've seen down some states, you know, particularly Florida. This has been an area of concern where they have mandated how this procedure is to be done and what facilities is to be done and what training is to be had and things like that. But there are intelligent ways to do fat grafting. The plexus that supplies the most blood supply is probably just under the surface of the skin. That's where the most blood vessels are. So if you can open a tunnel and you can fill the tunnel without a lot of pressure on the fat with fat as you go, and you can put fat in from several directions, and then you can massage it and support it and get the platelet-rich plasma in to hold it in place, and then put a little bit of a garment around it so you can hold that material so it doesn't shift a lot or get a lot of fluid that pushes it away from its nutrition or keeps the toxins in place. That's kind of a good way to get a long-lasting response where you're going to maintain decent volume for a tush. And obviously in the tush, we're going to mark those people standing up so that we can see where the hollows are. We can see where we want to have more projection. And we're going to blend that. The two sides of the tush are generally brothers or sisters, or not identical twins. So we have to mark the two sides differently. And there may be hip heights involved. If one leg is longer than the other, they're going to have a little subtle shift of the torso there. Those are all things that we look at as we are taking the body sculpting into account. And of course, getting the patient's input, you know, they're in front of a mirror while we're doing all those markings. Because once they lay down, everything shifts. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks totally different when they lay down. So we're going to put our fat in if we're trying to get a macro result. And then we're going to stand them up periodically. We're going to roll them and stand them until we end up with what we're looking, what we were aspiring for, mm-hmm. when that comes to that. And hopefully keeping the patient comfortable, obviously safe during that whole procedure. But it's a long procedure. And certainly, you know, when we're doing fat grafting, we want to make sure that the donor site is an area that either we're not going to show the deflation, or we specifically want to show the deflation. If we want to sculpt and accentuate the female breast, for instance, we can gain fat. We can take some of the fat from the adjacent armpit, coming down and making sort of an S curve to accentuate the curve of the lateral breast, but taking out the side boob. Mm-hmm. And that gives us an sort of a feeling of more projection of the female breast. And then we can put the fat in selectively so that we lift the breast by filling in the upper pole. So we call that natural breast enhancement or augmentation. And we can put fat in below the skin of the breast, not in the muscle, because muscles have big blood vessels through them. So you're more likely to potentially run into a risk putting fat blindly into a muscle where you might inject it inadvertently into a blood vessel. So we stay where it's safe and we map everything with ultrasound first. But you can lift the breast up so that the areola and the nipple areolar complex raises up a little bit, and you can fill the upper pole again to lift the breast up. You can use energy at the same time, and some people will use some energy to tighten the tissue first, and then we'll tunnel and add the fat as well. So those are, you know, kind of the long and short of both very careful selective fat grafting that we would do in the face and the neck and the décolleté, or more macro fat grafting that we would do if we were doing natural breast enhancement or the tush. A combination of that is what we do with high def lipo, because again, what you leave is as important as what you take away, but what you augment with accentuates what you leave. So you can really chisel out the cuts in the abdomen by increasing the areas where the muscles are undulating underneath, stuff like that.
Where's your favorite? Favorite's probably not the right word. Where do you think fat grafting does best at in your, over the time that you've been doing it? Do you see certain areas do better than other areas in general?
Yeah, you know, I think that the face selectively can do well because it's a very vascular area. Pros and cons. You can feed the fat or you can take it away with that vascularity. But using the right combination of macro structural fat and micro fat and PRP with a little bit of nano fat mixed in, I think you can get lovely results to elevate the lateral brows rather than doing an incisional forehead lift, to frame the eye better where people have gotten hollows or what I call peanut heads. So you can refill the temples, you could recreate the Nike swoop on the cheeks. Variable improvement under the eyes, because the skin under the eye is the thinnest skin on the body. It's really challenging to get a nice transition from the lower eyelid down onto the cheek with any kind of filler. But with a moving target like fat, which may or may not take, and which may grow if you go up in weight and decrease in volume as you go down in weight, it can be even more challenging. Fat in the lips has been another challenging area because lips move a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that there's so much vascularity there that the fat we put in the lips sometimes gets taken away, but it looks good for a while. And if you're doing liposculpting anyway and you want to have a little bit of augmentation, it's reasonably inexpensive enough to use your own fat compared to a synthetic to refill those areas. I love to graft a little bit of slurry in a neck. I think it helps rejuvenate the neck skin and the skin of the décolleté. Fat in the backs of hands sometimes works too well. They end up being a little puffy, and you end up having to go back years later and very carefully take a little bit of that fat out. So, you know, those are areas that it works well. Fat in the tush in a person who is more couch potato than athlete can work really well. But, you know, if you're one of these people that's looking to, you know, rest a beer on the top of the tush, I'm not your guy. I don't like to over accentuate things beyond what Mother Nature in her best or worst days would do. Mm-hmm. So we like things to look very natural and to look less done than overdone, but just to be in proportion.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we have a lot of men calling about fat grafting for their penises.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about what you tell those guys.
Well, again, fat is a little bit of a fickle substance. And if you're dealing with a guy who is always a shower, that we have a long non-accordioning element to work with, it may work better. But we're putting the fat in between the skin, which moves up and down, which may or may not have a foreskin or a circumcision scar. And we're putting that be there. And at the base of the penis, that same surgical plane goes out into the pubic area or down into the scrotum. There's not a whole lot to keep the fat from migrating if you don't keep it where it's supposed to be, out into the pubic area. And we spend time taking fat away from the pubic area to make penises show more, to make more of the shaft of the penis able to be seen from the outside. And, you know, not many guys have come in requesting significant enlargement of the scrotum. Mm-hmm. But we can increase, you know, a half an inch to an inch and a half or so, a little bit more sometimes on the girth. We can't affect the length, but the girth of a penis. So we can take a grower and make him a shower all the time. But whether it's going to stay in place, whether it's going to shift and leave you more fat on one side than the other, we've seen that more with cases that have come in from out of the country where they haven't gone through some of the post-operative wrapping and abstaining from relations and things that we talk about. So it can be great. I haven't seen many that have lasted, you know, more than, say, 5 years. And we've certainly corrected a number of them where they've been fat out of proportion, where all the fat, either from gravity or care or whatever, has migrated to one side or typically the underside of the penis under the head. Mm-hmm. Because fat just responds to gravity and fluid, and there's ways to avoid that. But, you know, every guy is a little bit different, whether you have to, you know, put things in sort of a soft cast or have things positioned up or down or whatever in order to keep the fat where you want it. So it's a little bit tricky, mm-hmm. and it doesn't always last. When it does last, it has all the rejuvenative elements, and I think that it's good for a phallus to have those rejuvenative elements. I think that in the long term, one could argue that it might help with erectile function and keeping the blood supply in the corpora cavernosa moving and things like that. But, you know, fat is not just a storage form of calories. It contains rejuvenative elements. And we use that stromal vascular fraction, whether it's cellular or tissue stromal vascular fraction, to rejuvenate areas of the body and to help treat injury and things like that. That's a whole nother podcast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that we're not quite as able to do things in this country because of our oversight by the FDA, good or bad. You can make arguments both ways, but there certainly is a lot of work going on with the use of rejuvenative tissues. Your own rejuvenative tissues are the ones that we favor to improve trauma and inflammatory issues elsewhere in the body. So rotator cuffs, lateral epicondylitis, knees, hips, things like that, areas where there have been issues. And certainly in areas where they've had difficulty in healing, concentrating those rejuvenative cells one way or another seems to help with healing as well.
So are you talking about PRP or are you talking about...
PRP doesn't have many stem cells.
So you're talking about the plasma. Nanofat.
So the nanofat per se, and then taking it a step further, to isolate cellular stromal vascular fraction, which still okay. has microcells in it, or tissue stromal vascular fraction, which is nanofat on steroids. So there's still a few fat cells in there, as well as a number of other kinds of cells.
And so those you're saying are. The FDA does not allow us to do that at this time?
It's a gray area. And so we're carefully under their guidance. Starting to tread in that area again. We had some great successes in the mid 2010 to 2020. In 2017, the FDA came out with pretty much of an edict that said, we don't have enough science behind this. We're not comfortable with it going on. And we all stopped mm-hmm. for the most part. And since then, we're getting better studies, better 510Ks, and better guidance as what we can safely do. You know, I don't know that we hurt a lot of people. I don't know we hurt anybody. I don't know that we necessarily benefited people because there were a lot of things that were going on with, instead of autologous, homologous use of these cells, people were isolating cells from Wharton's jelly and from amniotic cells, umbilical cells, things like that, that should, you know, be, you know, relatively flexible cells, but there's a lot of issues with putting cells from something, someone else or something else in a human body in terms of cross-matching and things like that. So if you can use your own cells, if your cells are not too old, there's a lot of, I think we're going to see in the next 5 or 10 years, a lot of exciting developments of what we can do with our own cells. And there's a good reason to take some of your own fat cells or hair cells or whatever stemish cells you've got and store them away in liquid nitrogen for a rainy day in the future when you may be able to make use of them with more technologies and understanding what we can safely do with them.
That's exciting.
Yeah, you won't make a new you. You won't be able to clone yourself. You're not going to live forever. You're not going, but there's a lot of things you can do to maintain mental and physical function that I think we'll be able to do with cells as we move along. And that's very exciting. It's a very exciting time to work with fat these days.
Yeah. Well, gosh, a lot to think about if you're wanting to do fat versus filler in any of these areas. But yeah, a lot more to it than I would have thought.
Yep. There's really a lot of science to it, and everybody, you know, has to be screened individually. We have to make sure there's no underlying immune issues and reasons that fat wouldn't take, or we're just wasting your time and money.
Right.
So a good amount of exploration there. Mm-hmm. But so we can chew the fat for a long time.
Right.
But that'll be actually another good topic for the next episode. But I think we've tried to talk a little bit about you know, the kinds of things that one can do with, you know, smaller fat grafting. So with the smaller fat grafting, by the way, you don't have to have a whole liposuction setup. You know, you can create a sterile field, numb an area up, use syringe liposuction with very small cannulas and isolate the fat away from oxygen and things like that. So you don't have to do a whole liposuction procedure in order to get small amounts of fat that you can use for rejuvenative procedures in the face. For instance, you may take 30 to 50 cc's, which you can artfully remove from most people. Not your super fit athlete has, you know, 10% fat mass or something like that. But most Americans, you can get a few teaspoons of fat and they'll never notice.
Right.
And then you can process that fat. You'll usually keep about half of it. And, you know, in terms of what are good fat cells to transplant, and you'll usually keep 50 to 70% of what you put in, usually, if it's put in as a mixture of macro structural fat, micro fat, nano fat, and PRP, you'll keep 50 to 70% of that in an area like a face, with the caveat of right under eyes and lips. Those are challenging areas to keep volume long term. Mm-hmm. But to correct a defect or a divot, or somebody who got a steroid shot where the steroid didn't go into the muscle and it caused fat atrophy, they got a golf ball sized divot. Once you wash all the steroid crystals out, if you want to graft that area with fat, that usually takes great. So lots of fun things you can do. And then when you go big, then you've got to do liposculpting. So we'll talk about the liposculpting that you do for a Brazilian butt or something like that. We've talked a little bit about natural breast augmentation for women, and we should talk about gynecomastia in guys. That'll be a good topic that involves a little bit of fat shifting and stuff.
Yeah.
So thanks for tuning in on this episode of Aesthetic Revolution, the podcast, where we've chewed the fat for a bit and talked about macro, micro, and nano fat grafting. Like, look, and listen. Ask us questions. We love answering questions about these things. And we'll see you next episode, where we'll chew the fat a bit more. Thanks for joining us.